everyone to a fantastic new Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper. We are crossing the river today. We are heading to the beautiful borough of Brooklyn to bring you a very exciting event and production happening out there. And joining us to talk to us about this, we have the director, founder, and artistic director of Molière in the Park, Lucy Tibergian, the performer playing for Zine, Lakeisha May, and the president of the board at Molière in the Park, Kaliswa Brewster. They're all here to talk to us about Molière in the Park's presentation of The Miser, playing April 27th through May 19th at Prospect Park's Lafrac Center. You can get your tickets and more information by visiting molièreinthepark.org. We're so excited to finally be talking about a Molière piece for one, but more importantly, we're so excited to be bringing you another brilliant theater company here in New York City, and this time, of course, in the borough of Brooklyn. So with that, let us go ahead and welcome on our guests, Lucy, Lakeisha, Kaliswa. Welcome to Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper.
Thank you. Hello.
It's great to be here.
I'm so happy you're all here. I'm so happy we're talking today about the show we're talking about, and more importantly, about your company. This is incredible. So, Lucy, let me start with you first. As you are the director of this piece, can you tell us a little bit about The Miser?
Yes, I can tell you a little bit about The Miser. So The Miser is the third full production we do at Molière in the Park. One thing I will add to your lovely introduction is that all our shows are free. We offer free theater in Prospect Park, and our mission is really to democratize access and to bring people from all walks of life together to experience the joys of live theater. So everything, all of our shows are free, and we love our mission and we're very excited about it. So The Miser is an interesting play because it's the first play of Molière's that I'm directing that is not in verse. It is in prose. And with that comes a level of modernity and accessibility, or I should say an ease with bringing the piece to the 21st century and without really modifying the text at all. But it has felt very easy to make it feel incredibly relevant. And it seems like at every turn, it speaks about our world today. And so that's been really exciting.
That is fantastic. Oh, I love that. So I want to come to you and I want to ask, you know, you are the president of the board of this company. How is it that you all came upon this piece or selected this piece in general?
Well, I have to turn that over. The selection of art and what we do, that is Lucy's domain. I am an artist and actor myself, so I have a lot of strong opinions, but I have to trust her direction and stay on my side of the governance fence there. However, one thing that I would like to add about Molière and why we do Molière. We had an event the other night, and I was sort of thinking about, how is it relevant? Why is it relevant? Why Molière? And he's funny, first of all. So I like to say this is a dead white old playwright. Why are we doing it? He's funny and he has an amazing commentary on society. And I think like a good comparison in today's modern world would be if you watch television and you watched White Lotus that Mike White wrote and directed. It's that sort of taking what's going on in society and sort of putting it in our faces and making fun of it. And that's what we're able to do with Molière in the Park. And The Miser is a great example of that. But as far as like choosing it, that's a little outside of my domain. So I'll pass that one back over to Lucy.
I can say very briefly that the way that we decide which Molière plays to do is by doing a staged reading in the fall. And we test the translation, we test the play in front of an audience, we see if it feels like it's really resonating with the moment, we see if we like the translation, and then, you know, in the spring or a year later, we'll either do that play or not. And then, you know, eventually as we grow, I think we'll also start doing other authors. But for now, we're kind of very happy exploring the Molière oeuvre.
I love all that. Well, I want to bring in our lovely performer, lovely actress, Lakeisha May, playing that wonderful role of Franzine. What has it been like developing this particular piece as we roll into opening in just a few days?
Yes. Developing Frozen. It has been so much fun. You know, we are doing this classic play, as Kaliswa says, a dead old white man, but this European classic is really still relevant today. It's timeless. Unfortunately, these themes of greed and all of that is still required today. So developing Frozen has been a lot of fun. We're doing this classic, but Lucy has spoken about the work that we're creating. We're creating a bridge to modern day Brooklyn. And so that gives me a lot of freedom to explore and build on this woman that I kind of like to think of as like a compassionate madam who like passes the ball. She, a lot of assists, you know, she's not the one that is in the forefront. She's a hustler with heart. She's a worker, you know, sensuality is one of her tools, but it's not everything. You know, she's able to like wheel and deal. She's someone who moves among classes, which I love. So she's comfortable with the servants, and she's also, you know, working for the upper class and able to be this matchmaker. Like her actual title in the play is the matchmaker for Harpagon. And like she says, you know, it's a hard world out there and only intrigue and cunning will get you through. And I think that that's something that really wraps up who Frozen is. She's willing to use whatever, do whatever it takes to get what's needed, but from a place of heart, she's not conniving. And she's, I will also say, she's the only one in the play that I feel like is a match for Harpagon. Like he's not able to get one over on her completely. She doesn't quite, yeah. Anyway, I won't give things away, but you know, she's able to kind of make things happen.
I love that. Yes. We love a good, strong character that can hold her own and everything, you know, that's always fabulous. Now, Kaliswa, I want to come to you and slip this question in because I'm really curious to know, you know, the production, you free tickets, you know, this is a great performance in the park. What can audiences expect from this evening?
So what we are building here, you know, they say, if you build it, they will come. And Lucy had this vision for free theater in Brooklyn for all. And what I love being a Brooklynite, I love this town within a town. And I feel like we have every type of person in Brooklyn, every type of culture, every type of race, every type of class, every type of level of education. And a lot of times we are in our silos. You stay with what you're comfortable with. You know, we have an amazing Caribbean population, Jewish population, Palestinian population, gentrifying population. We've got the Park Slope moms. We've got, you know, just the kids riding their skateboards through the park, the millionaires, the teachers, all these things. Our vision is that every type of person feels welcome and is able to sit down together and breathe the same air. And it doesn't matter if you could afford a $500 ticket or if you don't have $1.50 in your bank account. Our goal is for you to come sit down with 200, 300 strangers and laugh together and feel like you belong. And that's what we happen. That's what we see happens night after night. Last year, we had 5,000 people come and see our show, Tartuffe. This year with The Miser, we're hoping to have 7,000 people. And when you come to a show, this is not sit rigid in your seat theater. This is make noise. This is laugh. This is be present. This is, you know, come alive and experience and breathe and be all of you and bring all of you. And one funny thing about, you know, again, this 400-year-old playwright is with the translations, this one is in prose, which does make it more accessible. But what we have found is a lot of, you know, younger people who come to see our shows, it happened with The Misanthrope 2 years ago, it happened with Tartuffe last year, you know, they'll be like, yo, who wrote that? Like, that's dope. Like, where can I see more of that work? And it's like, yeah, that's great, but he's dead. Like, he's not coming up with any great hits again soon, but it's so relevant. It's so alive that it just really speaks to the moment. And we're excited to bring that energy of now and that energy of meeting new neighbors and friends because it's open access to everybody.
I love all of that. That is amazing. I want to kind of snowball off of that though and come back to you, Lucy. And I want to know, What is the message or thought you hope audiences are going to take away from your production?
Well, as Keisha said, you know, the play has at its center a character named Harpagon, who is a miser, meaning he hoards all his money and lives in fear of not having enough, and kind of deprives his family and his community from enjoying any of his wealth, which he has a lot of. So that alone feels relevant. I think there's plenty of people all around who, you know, could use a little bit of, you know, generosity and, you know, less fear also. I think fear is huge. What we are also doing in our play, in our production, is this play, this part is being played by a woman. Her name is Francesca Faridani. And first of all, she's amazing, but also as a woman playing this part, we are adding, I think, a very clear feminist touch to this play. We also changed the gender of one of the characters. In the original play, Harpagon has a son and a daughter. In our production, Harpagon has two daughters, and his daughter is in love with another woman. And as a result, there are a lot of very, very strong women in this show, and they are holding their ground and saying their piece and speaking truth to power. And I find that to be really exciting.
I love that. And again, this definitely shows the timeliness of the piece with that idea behind it. Lakeisha, I want to ask you that same question as one of the performers. You know, what is the message or thought you hope the audiences will be taken away?
Yeah. You know, I realized a couple weeks ago, after I read the play again for like the sixth time, and I was like, Harpagon only gets things done by the workers that are around him. And so it took me back to COVID times, the lockdown period, when we really realized how important, you know, certain folks are to making our society work, the essential workers, you know. And yes, you know, money is the currency by which we're able to achieve a lot of freedoms in this country and in this world. However, like I said, reminding myself and all of us of that time during COVID, when it was like, oh, those folks in the supermarket, those folks who are delivering your food, you know. And so I hope people leave with a great sense of compassion for the people who make our day-to-day survival work and happen, and particularly in this city. And so, and especially with a character like Harpagon, who is so fearful of everything, it's about the community. And so community and essential workers, I hope that people leave with that.
I love that. Yes. Say that again for the people in the back. I mean, that is absolutely amazing. My final question for this first part, I want to throw your way, Kaliswa. Who do you hope have access to this production happening?
Well, great question. A couple of answers. I want to answer it a couple different ways. One, access is definitely at the forefront of our mission statement, but we truly mean it when we say access for all. So in Prospect Park, we are in the southeast corner of the park for a reason. You know, we do have the band shell over closer to Park Slope, but we chose to be on the southeast corner of the park because that area has less access to the arts. So we want to bring theater to people who have less access. However, we also, like I said, want everybody there. So it's important to us that every type of Brooklynite can come. So if you live in Prospect, if you live in Park Slope, you know, if you live in Prospect Heights, we still want you there. We just want you to do something that you don't normally do. We want you to travel to the other side of the park and have everybody be together there, not necessarily where it's most comfortable for you. So we want kids there. We want elderly folks there. Last year, we had a nursing home came and brought folks. Last year, we had like some unhoused folks there. We want everybody there. When we say we want access for all, that is truly what we mean. Every type of person belongs. Hopefully, every type of person will see themselves there. see themselves represented in the play, or if they don't see themselves, they'll think about their grandmother or their auntie or their neighbor. Like, it truly should be a home for everybody.
And yeah, one thing we think about a lot is that there's a very stark socioeconomic disparity in Brooklyn between communities on one side of the park and communities on the other side of the park. And we are at Lefrak Center. We build a theater from scratch every year that's in the round. So it's very open. You know, the show happens, there's audience on all sides, but there's also a ton of people who just walk by, can stop, they can watch, they can grab a chair, they can keep going, they can decide that they'll come back the next time. I think by being where we are able to, you know, to plant a little seed and hopefully grab the attention of somebody who has felt that theater is not for them, that there's nothing here for them, and that suddenly see a group of people, you know, listening, laughing, music playing, and suddenly, you know, feel like, oh, maybe this is for me after all, and maybe I will come, and then maybe I'll become part of the next generation of theater goers. You know, we think that building that diverse generation of theater goers is a pretty vital thing to do right now, and we are hoping that we're playing our part in doing that as well.
The second part of our interviews, we love giving our listeners a chance to get to know our guests a little bit better. Pull the curtain back, if you will. And I want to start by asking all of you my regular first question, which is, what or who inspires you? What playwrights, composers, or shows have inspired you in the past or are just some of your favorites? And Lakeisha, I want to start first with you, if I could.
Yeah. So some of my favorite shows really give like an honest portrayal of this life thing that we're all experiencing. And sometimes like really uncomfortably honest. Like I saw Downstate at Playwrights Horizon, and that was, you know, incredibly moving and disturbing, and like challenged me as a human to see people in a different way. It's about registered sex offenders, for those of you that don't know. And also plays like Sunset Baby by Dominique Mariso, Pipeline, and Sojourners by Mfaniso Udofia, which I was actually in as well. But still, I think the play is great. And writers, Dominique, Jocelyn Bio, Mfaniso Udofia, they really inspire me. Because like I said, they're writing work that really speaks to our time and shines a light on communities that often don't get their story told in a way that's really nuanced and imaginative and heightened and creative. It's not just like nothing wrong with documentaries or just, you know, a straight retelling of the exact events that happened. Nothing wrong with that. That actually can be quite thrilling. But, you know, sometimes you want to have a taste of some flair and some imagination and some poetry. And so to have all of that in one, those are the stories that inspire me as a creative, as an artist, and also as a human.
I love that list. Absolutely love that. You come sit right here by me, because those are just fantastic shows. Some of my favorites right there. Yes. Kaliswa, what about you? What or who inspires you?
Yeah, I mean, I love all of the names that Keisha put out, all of the shows. And I would add for myself, there are a ton of contemporary playwrights that I love. And I also have this like inner classical theater nerd in my heart. So I find that I tend to also be attracted to writers who write in the contemporary world, but somehow are larger than life and have like a certain sense of style to them. So with that, like, I remember loving Fat Ham. Like, I absolutely loved Fat Ham. And then in a completely different world, I really loved Dead Outlaw. Like, I thought that was like so fun and so unexpected. And then I also just have to say, and also shout out, because she didn't say it, Keisha was in Jaws on Broadway. And I believe that, yeah, you see, she was in it and she was fantastic. And that really did, that's another show where, like she was saying, it pulls the veil back on a world that we don't often get to see. And it was just really special to see a larger Broadway, you know, commercial audience, like having a peek behind the curtain, but also having it, that story not be dumbed down. You know, it was accessible, but as a Black woman, as a first generation American from Liberia who sat in many a braiding shop, I was like, oh yeah, I know that. But I was seeing a wider audience get to see what that is and what those relationships are.
I don't have words. I mean, that is such a great list. This list that you all are creating just keeps getting better and better. Well, rounding us out on this question, Lucy, tell me, what or who inspires you?
Gosh, okay. So I was also going to say Fat Ham. And the reason also why I was going to say Fat Ham is also because James Imes, the playwright, is somebody that I had the incredible pleasure of working with on developing his plays down in Philadelphia, where he's from. And his ability to, I think what you said, Calisto, is really interesting, because it feels to me that he's always writing a classic. There's something about the depth of his knowledge and the depth of his ambition with his writing, and the specificity of his writing and his language, and the way that he sort of blends tragedy and humor, that to me feels very Molière-esque, to be honest. Like, I think he really has a gift to do something absolutely unique with Fat Ham and other of his plays. And so definitely very inspired by him. I'm going to talk for a second, I'm not going to bore you all, but a French woman philosopher and psychologist, her name is Anne Dufour-Mantel. She wrote a book called In Praise of Risk. And it's a series of essays about the nature of life and risk taking. And from a psychologist point of view, she also talks about some of her conversations with patients and what taking risk means for us, and how being alive is about taking a risk, and how every day it is almost our, you know, our both our gift and our danger to sort of step into our day and our life with an open heart and an ability to be alive and be present and take that risk. So I keep going back to her book. I have it by my bed, and I come back to it all the time. It's an incredible, incredible book. Last but not least, there's one production that just blew my mind. It was already a few years ago, so it's maybe going to feel old, but it was A View from the Bridge, Ivo Van Hove's version on Broadway. I come back to it all the time because the poetry of the production, the language, this play that we all know done in that way, it just opened up, I think, a whole new way of, you know, how we can do classics. So, you know, I was really very, very moved by that. The final gesture, the blood coming down, all of that, it was just, I was just very happy to be a theater artist on that day. Yeah.
That is a stellar list. All of you. Oh my gosh. These were great, great inspirations. Thank you for those. Well, we've now arrived at my favorite question to ask guests, and I am so excited to hear yours. And that, of course, is, what is your favorite theater memory?
For me, it actually is kind of both. Well, it's mostly the spectator in these instances that are coming to mind. So I went to graduate school with Calisto. We went to the American Conservatory Theater in San Francisco. And while I was there, they did the John Doyle production of Sweeney Todd, where the actors actually played the instruments as well. So there was no orchestra really. And I was an usher because, you know, grad school, you need to make some money. And I saw that show so many times. And I fell in love with, I wasn't a musical theater person before that, but it really, no matter how I was feeling, if I was exhausted from, you know, our 12-hour days or whatever, I would just be like riveted. And it really set me up. It really just helped me understand how much I just love watching performers, actors, especially create in the moment every single night for a live performance. I had a similar experience when I lived in LA briefly, and I used to facilitate the audience talkbacks for Center Theater Group. And I saw the Jitney production, the Broadway production that happened. I saw it on Broadway, but then I also saw it in LA because I worked it. And same, I would sit in the audience. We didn't have to, but I would sit in the audience every night and watch that show. We had about maybe 15 or so talkbacks that we did. And I saw it about 15 times. And each time I saw it, I was moved. I learned something. I was like glued to it. It's such an honor and a privilege to have the experience to watch my fellow actors and artists do what we do, and to see it grow and to build. And I learn, I'm also entertained. And so those memories of watching my peers do their thing is strong for me and keeps me going, honestly.
That is a wonderful memory. Thank you so much for sharing that.
I will jump in briefly with a theater memory. It goes way, way back when I was myself a dancer. And as a very young student dancer in Geneva, Switzerland, I got to be in operas as a dancer at the Geneva Opera House. And there was this French director who would do all the Offenbach operas. And inevitably, he had a company of dancers do can-can. Yeah. French can-can, yeah, yeah. And so I was a can-can dancer, you know, and my friend Carolyn, shout out to her, I adore her. We were doing a can-can routine, exhausting, etc. This is so not as inspiring as you, Keisha, because it's very silly. But I turned around and she had painted one of her teeth black. So she smiled at me with like a big... And I don't know. I mean, the opera itself was extraordinary. The costumes, the music, and then to put that with the silliness of my best friend Carolyn, who just wanted to make me laugh on stage. I thought, oh, I like being in this world and I am going to continue trying to do this.
It's amazing. What a wonderful memory. I love that. And bringing us home, Kaliswa, what is your favorite theater memory?
I'm going to be the classical theater girl again, but it was when I was in high school back in Seattle. We took a trip to the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, and they were doing a production of Romeo and Juliet. And to that point, to date, I hadn't seen a ton of classical theater. But my idea of classical theater, and mind you, like the Baz Luhrmann had come out, and, you know, I just thought that these were going to be white actors playing the title roles. And it turned out that they had cast a Latina actress as Juliet, and it blew my entire mind that that was possible. And it set me up to believe that possibly I could play a role like that in the future, which... ironically, I did. The director of that production was Penny Metropolis. And years later, she directed Romeo and Juliet for the acting company. And I got to be that Juliet. And I don't know how that happened. And it is like some sort of like full circle moment. But I'm also thinking and getting a little bit teary now because they're doing Romeo and Juliet in London. And the Black actress who is playing Juliet, her first name is Francesca. I can't remember her last name. I don't want to butcher it. She's gotten so much hate for being cast as a Black Juliet. And it is insane to me that that is happening in 2024 when I felt like in the, you know, early 2000s, I saw so much growth. And then I was able to tour the country and it was a little shaky certain places, but I can't believe that in 2024, we're having that same reaction for people. But again, it makes me feel so happy about what we are doing in Molière in the Park, which is reimagining, reclaiming, and reframing the classics to be for everybody.
Yes, yes, yes. Oh, I love that memory. And what a great message to tag on there as well. Thank you for that. Thank you all so much for those great memories. My final question for you all is, if our listeners would like more information about Moyer and the Parks, the Miser, or about any of you, perhaps they'd like to reach out to you, how can they do so?
So they can go to our website. It's www.molierintheparc.org. There they can follow links to our production of The Miser, and they can book tickets. So what we do, everything is free, but we ask people to reserve a ticket on Eventbrite. And then of course we do open it up to people who are walking by, but it's nice to have a count of people who will show up. So yes, through our website, it's very easy. We also have an opening night on May 3rd that is a benefit performance. We're trying to raise funds so that we can continue doing what we're doing. So that's our only paying ticketed performance. And if anyone wants to support us, they can buy their ticket also by following the link on our website. And we can also be reached at communications@molierintheparc.org, but that's easy on the website. There's also a way to get in touch with us. Like if someone wants to volunteer for us, or, you know, find out more about us, you know, spread the word, advocate for us, become a board member, they can reach us through our website.
They can also follow us at Molière in the Park on Instagram. Yes. At Molière in the Park.
Yes.
And for me, you can follow all the different things that I do at Keisha_May, KISHA_May, May, like the month, on Instagram. And you can see all the exciting projects that I'm acting in, that I'm producing. Even check out my advocacy page, Farmer Keisha, where I do some like food and farming advocacy work. But Keisha_May is where you can see all things Lakeisha May.
Wonderful. Well, Lucy, Lakeisha, and Kaliswa, thank you all so much for taking the time to stop by, share this amazing show, your amazing company. Oh my gosh, your inspirations and stories, they're fabulous. This has been a wonderful, wonderful time. So thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you. It was a great, great conversation. Thank you.
Yeah.
My guests today have been the director, founder, and artistic director, Lucy Tibergian, the performer playing the role of Forzine, Lakeisha May, and the president of the board, Kaliswa Brewster. They joined us today to talk about the Molière in the Park presentation of The Miser, happening April 27th through May 19th at Prospect Park's Lefrak Center. Tickets and more information are available at molierintheparc.org. And we also have some contact information for our guests, which we'll be posting on our episode description, as well as on our social media posts. But come join us. It'll be a great night out at the theater in the beautiful borough of Brooklyn, right there in Prospect Park. It is the weather. It is the season for this. So make sure you join us April 27th through May 19th for The Miser. So until next time, I'm Andrew Cortez, reminding you to turn off your cell phones,
unwrap your candies,
and keep talking about the theater
in a stage whisper.
Thank you.
If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review, like, and subscribe.
You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Stage Whisper Pod.
And feel free to reach out to us with your comments and personal stories at stagewhisperpod@gmail.com.
And be sure to check out our website for all things Stage Whisper and theater. You'll be able to find merchandise, tours, tickets, and more. Simply visit stagewhisperpod.com. Our theme song is Maniac by Jazzar. Other music on this episode provided by Jazzar and Billy Murray. You can also become a patron of our show by logging on to patreon.com/stagewhisperpod. There you will find all the information about our backstage pass as well as our tip jar. Thank you so much for your generosity. We could not do this show without you.